And I understand right now, Sean McKeel, my old buddy, is on the line. Sean, are you there?
I am, John. How are you?
I'm doing great. How'd you like that story?
I liked it. I turned the radio down because I was calling in, so I didn't hear the end of the story. But I heard Indiana University in my name and Arnold Palmer mentioned in the same sentence. So I'm not sure where I fit in that, but probably somewhere towards the bottom where I deserve to be.
No, absolutely not. That's pretty cool. Apparently, there is a flag that has your autograph and Arnie's autograph from the Masters from several years ago. So that's pretty good stuff. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Well, you know, interesting about that too is if I'm not mistaken, he said 2004. Is that right?
I believe so.
Yeah, that was my first Masters, and you know, my first Masters, I was paired the first two rounds with Colin Montgomery and Jay Haas, and we played behind Arnold Palmer, which I don't know if that was his last Masters. I think it was, but we played behind him the first two rounds. So it was pretty interesting to be part of that as well.
When you hear people talk about a place that you've played and competed the way that they do and with the reverence in their voice, what does that make you feel?
Well, I think it is a special place. I heard a little story prior to me calling in about someone saying that they thought they were playing in church, and that is the feeling that you have when you first get there. You know, besides being a rookie and trying to figure out all the little nuances of the golf course, the first things are, what are some of the rules? cell phone rules, and those exist to players. You know, there's been a number of players over the years that have kind of found themselves a little hot water by being on the cell phone, either in the parking lot or anything outside of the confines of the clubhouse. So there's a few little things, but it's really interesting that the previous caller did say that, you know, you don't have to be a golf fan to really want to tune into the Masters. And I think that's just a tribute to really, you know, the membership and just the way they've really kind of gotten themselves out to the masses. And I know they're doing an even better job with that now. They're reaching 200-plus countries and, but as a player, I'm a player and a fan, and you don't always find that amongst players. And you may know this, that there are events that, you know, you see your buddies playing in, but you're off doing, you miss the cut, you're off doing something for the weekend. You may not know who won until Monday morning in the newspaper. So, but it is one of the events that I will watch pretty much from the time that it comes on until it's over. And then I'm even disappointed when they don't show more.
I agree with you. I completely agree with you. It's just one of those special weeks. Now, you've been playing some pretty good golf. How's your health?
Yeah, my health is fine. It's a lot better than it was last year. I had a lot of things kind of going on last year, but you know, again, as you know, when you get a little bit north of 40, it's not quite the same. But you know, I've been playing a lot better golf. I'm actually starting to see a lot of my old self, you know, a lot of fairways, a lot of greens. And, you know, I haven't been putting very well for about the last year and a half. And it's odd because I'm using the same putter, same thought process and everything else. And, you know, they're getting close to the hole, but they're just not going in. But I'm putting up some pretty good numbers. It's just a matter of getting four rounds together. And I think that comes with, you know, good preparation, but also making cuts and things like that. And, you know, we kind of live and die by the previous shot. And, you know, I got a chance to play with Luke Donald on Sunday at Tampa when he ended up winning the playoff. And, you know, he hit some loose shots, as we all do. And it just made me realize that, you know, you don't have to be perfect. You know, you just play to your strengths. Chip the ball well, and it all sounds so easy when you put it up like that. But it was a good opportunity for me to kind of witness, you know, him taking over number one in the world again, and just kind of seeing what his process was like and how he carried himself on Sunday. So maybe I took something away from that.
There, you know, let's talk about him for a second because you know, they're saying, well, the golf course is going to play long this week, so a guy like Luke Donald, you know, may be at a disadvantage. I can't imagine Luke Donald ever at a disadvantage on any golf course. When you putt that well and your iron game is that good, how could you be at a disadvantage?
Yeah, I agree. You know, people talk about the Masters. It may be one of the courses that's maybe not the most penal off the tee, although you know, look, they've moved a lot of those tees back, and, you know, he hits it out there plenty far. I was actually quite surprised, you know, where he was driving his ball. And, you know, he hit a few errant shots, but the errant shots that I saw him hit weren't with the driver. They were with the fairway wood. So, but, you know, Augusta National requires, you know, a little bit of length off the tee. That obviously makes every course easy. But just placement on the greens and just the feel and the touch and the imagination to play that golf course. And I think he has that.
Who do you like this week? I mean, obviously the best players are playing their best golf right now. Who do you look at and say, you know what, I'll be surprised if he doesn't compete here this week?
You know what, you know, it's funny you say that because I know Brandel Chamblee has really taken the word parity to a new level. And by that, I mean, he's really gone negative with it. I mean, I think the last couple of years, he says that parity's not good in golf. And I think right now there's a lot of parity, but I think the parity is at the highest level that you've seen in a while. I think, you know, this Masters may be one of the most viewed, maybe the most compelling, you know, in years past because there are so many guys playing great golf. You know, I like Hunter. I like the way Hunter's playing. Houston was playing long and wet, and, you know, I don't think he's going to have any type of low from last week. You know, again, you know, Phil has come out, and he loves the golf course so much and knows the places to be, but I just think that the conditions maybe is going to not separate the field quite as much. You know, I think that the Masters, the way they set the golf course up could be completely different because they could put pin positions that you've never seen before. They could put them closer to the edges with the softness of the green. So it's really hard to say, but I really like the way Hunter Mahan's playing, and I think maybe it's his time.
What's your favorite spot? Somebody asked me this a little while ago, what my favorite spot at Augusta National is. Is it spending time in the clubhouse? Is it what when you look at Augusta and say, boy, this is very cool, what are the first things that come to your mind?
Well, you know, yeah. I mean, obviously, other than driving down Magnolia Lane and realizing that you've been granted access. But, you know, I think sitting in the clubhouse, having a sweet tea with a little peanut butter and jelly sandwich that they've always got there, just looking out over the first fairway, typically blue skies and lots of colors out there. You know, those are great memories. I mean, the locker room when you walk in it just smells like it should, you know. And it's hard to explain that just the wood that they've used in the locker, there's just a scent there. But, you know, when you get out on the golf course in the tournament, you lose kind of sight of that because from starting with the first tee shot to you putt out on 18, there's a lot of peril out there. And you're not really taking stock of what's really out there. And I think sometimes you know, I haven't played in 4 years. So I have a lot of great memories, but there are a lot of things I wish I would have taken advantage of when I was playing. But, you know, just the smells of being around that place, the sounds, just the excitement, the energy. I mean, I think everybody could kind of write their own story. But, you know, having my family there and sharing in that is really an all-encompassing experience. I don't think I could really put it down to just one or two.
Well, you know, you are in a unique position. Because of the tremendous victory in 2003, of course, we're talking to Sean McKeel, that you're invited back every year to the grounds as a major champion and to go play the par three contest. Is that something that maybe not now while you're still competing and competing at a very high level, but maybe in 10 years or 15 years when you can, you know, take the grandkids, if you will?
Yeah.
Is that something that you say, one day I'm going to do that?
It is. Yeah, it is. I thought about that. And you know, Phil mentioned something yesterday or day before in his press conference about being nominated or being put into the Hall of Fame while his career was still ongoing, that most people, when they're put in the Hall of Fame, they're reflecting on their career. And I feel the same way about that. As much as I love that place, I still feel like I'm kind of in the know with the players and I'm not ready to do that. I mean, look, it's a great place, but I'm just for my own personal reasons would not be ready to to make that journey yet. But you're right. In about 10 years, maybe 15 years, when my competitive game is completely over, I could see myself going there. You know, I just have so many great memories of, you know, my father caddying for me in my par three, my first Masters, to my son caddying for me in 2008. I'm just not ready to make that step quite yet.
No, and you shouldn't. I mean, you've been playing well. When you've gotten the opportunity to play one of the tournaments that, or a couple of tournaments you've played this year, you've gone over and played on the European Tour. Are you going to continue to do that? Are you going to play some more events over there?
I am. You know, John, I joined again as a member. You know, based on my 2003 PGA, I believe. I've not read the regulations. I'm just assuming that it's a 10-year. A 10-year exemption. So yeah, I played Dubai and Qatar, and I was able to get an exemption into Tampa and to Steve Timm's the Shell Houston Open last week. So very thankful to be playing closer to home. But right now, yeah, my schedule is I'm scheduled to go over to Spain and then come back home for a week or two, and then go over to Wentworth to play the BMW PGA. So. You know, I'm trying to balance that schedule. It is difficult, I think, to play two tours unless you're in the majors and the World Golf Championships. So it's tough. But look, Todd Hamilton's doing it. Rich Beam's over there. Ben Curtis is doing the same thing. You know, it's a unique position to be in. And you know, look, I need a place to play. And I played a nationwide event in Lafayette a couple of weeks ago, And man, those guys shoot some low scores there.
You know, were one of them once, you know.
It's a totally different mindset, you know, to play that tour. And I don't know if that's every week it's like that or what. And I've really scratched my head trying to figure out how that tour prepares a guy to play the PGA Tour. I don't know. It's not a knock on that tour. I just haven't been able to wrap my hands around that yet, because I finished 9-under, and then another Memphian, and Casey Wittenberg, beats me by 15 shots. So, it's incredible. And again, maybe it's just the way you need to think, and birdies on every hole. And, you know, when you play the tour for as long as I have, you know, you can't just go at every flag, you know, or maybe you can. Maybe that's what I should be trying. I don't know. So I'm kind of moving around a little bit this year. I don't know if I should be trying to play three tours, but I wanted to take advantage of get some more rounds under my belt, which is why I played Lafayette. And I really enjoyed my time. And I probably would do it again if I felt like I needed to get some competitive rounds in. But without being long-winded, I did join Europe again, and I've got to play 13 events, so I'll definitely have that done by the year end.
So that's the deal. It's 13 events, and. Obviously, the PGA counts, which you're in perpetuity. Yeah. So it's not all over there. And, you know, if you play well over there and it translates over here, you know, it's always that's going to work for you.
It is. And, you know, look, I'm a professional golfer. And that doesn't mean that I'm a professional golfer solely on the PGA Tour. And I think that attitude has really changed. As you can tell, the Europeans have made a huge migration over here. You know, Peter Hansen told me the other day, I think he's going to take up membership if he hasn't already. So there's more and more wherever, and I'm not in an event in the United States, then maybe I should just pack up and go. And I've always enjoyed my travels. You know, that started with me back in the Asian Tour in 1998 and was fortunate to finish third on the order of merit. I won the Singapore Open, and, you know, a lot of great things came from that. I just feel like, just getting on an airplane really isn't that big of a deal, you learn to manage yourself, learn to manage your body and the jet lag and everything else. But, I think the attitude over the years with some of the players about playing both tours is, okay, I just want to get my minimum. And they don't care how they play within those events. You know, I've got 13 events that I have to play, and I want to play well in those events. It's not like I just want to go over there and miss a cut and check that off. Say, well, there's another one I can take off. I want to compete, and I think, again, that goes back to just maybe having a better attitude than I've had in the last couple of years. So hopefully that'll work for me.
Well, and obviously, you know, you could, because of the way the PGA Tour schedule is set up this year and in the last 5 years, and also over in Europe, you know, good play could translate into a run in the playoffs here. It could the race for Dubai over there. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity going forward if you can, you know, continue to play the way that you're playing when things are going well.
Yeah, you know, that's right. You know, but again, as I said earlier, I don't know how many tours I need to be chasing. You know, I mean, where do you put your focus? I mean, and again, as I said, I think you focus on the event that you're in that particular week, and that's all you can do. I know Rich Beam and I actually have a different philosophy on Europe versus United States. You know, he thinks that, you know, you need to really spend a full time playing over in Europe as opposed to just kind of playing a few events here and there, and because he believes in the world ranking system, and that if you play well, you move up in the world rankings. And I don't necessarily believe that. I believe you play. You know, if you're in a tournament in the United States, you play. It's your home tour. You play. You're playing for $6 million every week, just about. Europe has really dropped off significantly in the money, and it's expensive to travel over there. The hotels are usually pretty expensive, but he and I just have a different philosophy. That's not to say that I'm right and he's wrong or vice versa. It's just the bottom line is, as I said, you have to be committed to play well the week that you're in, no matter where that is.
Right. And obviously you need a plan, and whether or not it's the same plan as somebody else, you have to figure out what's going to work for you. Sean, right. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you what it meant to you when people say, "There's Sean McKeel. He hit the greatest shot on the 72nd hole in major championship history."
Well, that's hard to put into words. It's something that, you know, when I get announced on the first tee that I think about, and usually the first thing that I think of is when I'm announced is that shot. And so, you know, it's hard to believe. It's almost been 9 years now. I think about it just about every day. You know, I count my blessings that, you know, I was fortunate enough to have competed at an extremely high level that particular week. And I did pretty well for the couple of years after that, and even up through 06 until I got injured. And then I've been kind of working my way through trying to get back, wondering if I'll ever have that feeling again. It's an incredible feeling. It really is. And look, I think about this, and they always talk about it whenever the majors come up, starting at the Masters, they talk about the player, that hasn't won a major, the best player to have not won a major. And fortunately for me, and I guess I'm bringing this up now, is that, you know, I think about sometimes, well, hey, you know, they've never really talked about the worst player to win a major. And so, you know, and that's my own personal conquest, I suppose, you know. You know, and I know that I've only won one time in the U.S. I've won, you know, one in the Nationwide Tour, won a bunch of mini tour events, and of course, one in the Asian Tour.
You made one heck of a run in a match play event.
I did, and I lost to Tiger at Medina. I finished second to Tiger, although I think he won by 4 or 5 shots, or maybe I wasn't really in it there. But those are some of the crazy things that players think about, and. You know, I'm not immune to that. I mean, I think about, man, maybe I should have just retired after 03. Then I wouldn't have been filled with all these negative thoughts. But I think, you know, in all honesty, I really think that those are just some of the demons that players battle. I mean, people worry about, okay, my putting's not good this day. I'm going to have the hips, and I'm not going to play well on Sunday. And I actually don't think about that type of stuff. I think about maybe my legacy as a PGA winner. And, you know, when you look at the names of the trophies, and there's been so many great, great names on there, and then I see my name, and I go, oh, man, I'm probably the worst of all of those people that are on that trophy. And that's a terrible thing to think about. But I'm just being honest with you and your listeners that those are the things that I battle with. And I'm wondering if maybe not some of that's not limiting my ability to play great golf again.
Well, when you see a guy like Paul Lowry, who wins the 99 British Open and then completely disappears until literally this year in his 40s and goes over in Europe and wins golf tournaments and is in contention every week, or you look at several other players who struggled throughout their career, like our friend Harrison Frazier, who goes and wins in Memphis last year. Does that say, you know what, it's not over? I still have time.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think you have to be committed. You know, you have to be all in this business. And that's, I think that's been lacking a little bit on my part. You know, I've got an 8-year-old son and a 5-year-old daughter, and, you know, my son wants me to retire. I don't think he understands that, you know, I still have things I need to pay for school, and but he doesn't understand that I love playing. I mean, it's definitely a balancing act with you know, your family and travel and everything else. But, you know, for me, it was just, man, how do I follow up with this? You know, Keegan Bradley has done extremely well. I mean, he wins his first major championship, and he's gone on. He's done some great things. But, you know, you look at guys in their 40s, and it's almost like you have a little bit of a resurgence. You're practicing harder. You're practicing longer. You're enjoying the game again. And, you know, I think that's Paul's played some pretty good golf for the last couple of years, but I think he's finally found his consistency back. He played well in Qatar this year and won by a handful of shots. So it's just difficult when you're not somebody that's expected to win a big tournament like that, and then all of a sudden you do, and you spend a lot of time trying to satisfy your critics, and I think sometimes you maybe don't practice in the right way, and you're just chasing some of the money that's out there for appearance fees and everything else. And you really, you know what, maybe it's just a once-in-a-lifetime thing, you know, for some of us. And if that's the case for me, then that's just the way it's going to be, and I'll live the rest of my life happy that I was able to achieve that. But I feel like there's some good golf left.
Yeah, I think so, too. And you know what? It hurts a little bit. I've known you for 15, 20 years now.
Yep.
It hurts a little bit to hear you say things like that, especially for those of us. I spent 10 years on the PGA Tour. I never won anything. And and I have nothing but admiration for what happened that week and for the game that I've watched you play for so many years. And I think that, you know, you just take a moment or two to realize, look, that was not a fluke. I have the game to go out there and win golf tournaments. And you have faced down some of the best in the game. And I, you know, are we not just our own worst critics in this game?
Yeah. I mean, well, look, like I said, I gave you pretty much an honest assessment. You know, I look myself in the mirror every single day and have since that 2003 PGA. And, you know, There have been times I'm like, you know, this game is really not that difficult. If I could just improve or be a little bit more consistent on the greens or, you know, whatever. And then, like I said, you go out and you play with Luke, and Luke is a great player. He's consistent. He keeps the ball pretty much in play. You know, make a bogey or two, no big deal. It comes back, and he just has a phenomenal short game. And you realize that you don't have to really overpower the golf course. You don't have to be a long hitter or – you don't have to excel in just one area. I mean, he's great in all areas. And I've always felt like that's kind of how my game was. You know, I was fourth in greens in regulation one year and 13th in another. And then, you know, I think in 06 or 04, I think I missed four cuts in total. And that was the game that I used to play. I was always there. But unfortunately, I think people are so consumed with victories. And we are as players, too.
Sure.
But you figure that you play a game that you lose almost every time. If your barometer is wins and losses, if victory is your barometer, then you're going to lose. I mean, even Tiger, I don't know what his percentage is now, but you play a game that you theoretically lose almost every time out. And, you know, that's why you always say, well, why aren't people so concerned with top tens? Well, because I think that's a great feat. You know, so those are little things too that you got to work your way through. If you don't beat yourself up too much, and you know, you wake up the next morning and you're ready to go, and even after a poor last round somewhere, I mean, I think that's just the nature of golf. But you have to enjoy what you're doing, and you have to be committed 100%. You can't just show up at an event and not be prepared. And you know, maybe you can do that when you're 48 and 49, and you're trying to figure out, okay, I'm in a kind of a weird area of my life. I'm getting ready to go on the Champions Tour, but I still feel like there's some good golf left for me on the PGA Tour, and so I'm really committing myself to playing well. I just need to get back and be a little bit more consistent and play four solid days, and hopefully I'll get back to where I was.
Well, I think that the game is certainly there. Before I let you go, Sean, I want to ask you, and I think I know the answer, but you've been closer to the experience than I have. There are a lot of players, and you can run down a list, who their careers were Hall of Fame worthy and are in the Hall of Fame, but this particular tournament eluded them, and they were unable to either get it done from out front after 54 holes. And of course, I'm talking about the Masters. Is there a tougher Sunday to lead in golf than this one? History would suggest that this is the toughest.
Yeah.
I mean, is it the jacket? Is it the idea of winning the Masters that overcomes players?
Yeah, I think so. I really do. I think, you know, when you get yourself in position to have a chance of winning a green jacket, you've obviously played some great golf. I mean, heck, just to be in the Masters takes quite a feat. You know, it's probably the hardest event to really qualify for, if you think about it. I mean, you have the difficulty of the golf course because, look, I can go through every pin position. I know where it's going to be. Every pin on Sunday is the same pin. And there was somebody arguing yesterday on the golf channel on the radio that they wished that they would change the pin positions up for Sunday, but that they're not going to do that. So yeah, I think just the allure of trying to have a green jacket to be a member, a lifelong member of one of the most prestigious clubs in the world. You know, it just takes on a whole new meaning, and you can see right at the start, you know, whether a guy's going to be successful or not. I mean, I know it always comes down to the back nine on Sunday, but you can tell when a guy plays those first four or five holes whether he's going to be in contention on the back nine or not. And experience plays a huge part in that. And, you know, what Charles Schwartzel did last year to birdie the last four holes to win is phenomenal, because I certainly don't think anybody – kind of picked him out, but he was playing well enough to give himself an opportunity until the back nine on Sunday, and he certainly did that.
Yeah, and you know, I said that's how he had to win it. I mean, I think that when the pressure is on someone else, it makes it a little bit easier to sort of fly underneath the radar and to not consider what it would mean to pull it off.
You're right. But I think, John, you know, I think we have internal pressures. It's not so much what people are saying or writing about. You can turn the TV off or turn the radio off or quit, don't read the newspaper, but you know what it means. You really do. And when people see people fall apart under pressure, that shows you what it really means to them, that they are trying so hard because they know what it would mean to be a Masters champion. I mean, look at Rory. I mean, a couple of bad shots, and I don't look at what he did as really choking. I think he just hit a couple of bad shots and put himself into some positions like, wow, how do I escape from this? And it just snowballs. It really does. And when it does, you either don't care, which is not the case, or it means so much to you that you just can't get out of your own way.
Well, I tell you what, we're on the air. From noon to 2 Saturday and Sunday, 11 to 2 on Friday. You are welcome back any time during that. Love to get your thoughts on the week as the Masters progresses.
All right. Well, John, I got the number, and I appreciate it. I apologize for taking up all your time.
No.
I really do.
No. As a matter of fact, stay on the line. Let Dominic give the backdoor number so that you don't have to wait in line.
Okay.
All right,
John. Hope you guys have a great Masters, and all the fans out there, you guys are in for a real treat.
Thanks, Sean. That's Sean McKelley, right. O3 PGA champion, and just one of the best guys. I don't think that I've heard a guy talk about the Masters, his championship in the PGA, and you know, the battle back. I think that if you weren't a fan of Sean McKelley's before, you certainly should be now.